Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomis Daf Pei Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins seven lines from the bottom of Daf Pei Ches. We open with a quote from the Mishnah that reads in the Gemara text, Teitzei Mizeh Umizeh. The Mishnah had said that a woman whose husband went abroad, and news came, and she was informed that her husband died. And then she went and married someone else. And then her husband came back. So the Mishnah says, on that, Teitzei Mizeh Umizeh, she must leave the first husband and the second husband. She needs a divorce document from each one of those men. Before we continue into the Gemara text itself, we glance at the side because you may notice in the Gemara we have some markings. So here we've indicated the Mivneh, the structural note, has the word Lo Shonu, you can see in a bow tie. And we also note that there's a number 1. You can see a bow tie 1 to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. And on Omid Beis, about halfway down the page, you'll notice a bow tie number 2. Both of them around the expression Lo Shonu. What we will be doing here is Hagdoros Shel Rav Ushmuel. Rav and Shmuel, they're going to be setting limits to that which the Mishnah says. And Mosayam Rinon, when do we apply the rule, Hadikotani, that which it says, Teitzei Mizeh Umizeh, that she must leave both husbands. And we have a note, Heora, a note. Ein kan machloikis bein Rav Ushmuel, elo kol echad din nif omer din nifrad. We're not featuring here a machlokis between Rav and Shmuel, but rather each one is offering their qualification of the Mishnah's teaching. Another structural note we have highlighted with this other geometric form that you can see. These are shnei hesberim, two explanations. This geometric form we refer to at times as the volcano shape or a trapezoid. These shapes highlight two hesberim, laha dekotoni Rav, two explanations regarding that which Rav says, avol niseis al pishnei edim lo teitzei. Now, if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses, so Rav says she doesn't leave. Lo teitzei miman. The question here is, she doesn't leave what? So the first approach, and this you will see really by studying the Rashi, and we wrote it in between the lines of our Gemara, is she doesn't leave lo teitzei mibal hasheni, from the second husband. The second approach that Rav Ashi will feature on Omid Beis, he says lo teitzei, she doesn't leave mibal horishon, the first husband. In other words, if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses that said she said that her husband died, her subsequent marriage to a second husband is something beyond her control. She's called an anusa, an oines. And an oines, a woman who experienced intimacy with another man, a married woman, that experienced intimacy with another man, but due to circumstances beyond her control, after all, there's nothing stronger than the testimony of two witnesses, so she is entitled to go back to her first husband. She's not viewed as a married woman leading a life of promiscuity. A woman like that, of course, is forbidden to go back to her husband after she willingly has intimacy with another man. But that's not the case if two witnesses had testified that her husband died. All of this hopefully will become clearer as we go into the Gemara. So now we pick up the Gemara. Omar Rav, Loi Shonu, Elo Sheniseis Be'ed Echad. that which the Mishnah teaches, teitzei mizeh umizeh, that she must leave the first husband and the second husband, after the story that we saw featured in the Mishnah, that's only if her marriage to the second husband was bi'eid echad, that one witness came and told her that her husband died. Avol niseis al pi shnei eidim loy teitzei. But if her marriage to the second husband was because of the testimony of two witnesses that said her husband died, she does not leave, she doesn't have to leave the second man. Now here, we when it says here, lo teitzei, Rashi says, ka salka daituch lo teitzei misheni. The thinking right now is she doesn't leave the second man. The reason Rashi says, ka salka daituch, which is an expression that means something that we think now, but it won't necessarily be accepted at the end, that's because Rav Ashi appears later, and that's why we have that second volcano shape we call Beis, indicating that lo teitzei there is going to mean she doesn't have to leave the first husband, she goes back to the first man. But in the meantime, we're saying that if, and this is Rav's teaching, that if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses, so lo teitzei, she doesn't have to leave. And right now we're explaining that she doesn't mean that mean to mean she doesn't have to leave the new husband. Machaku Allah Ale b'marova. Marova is Eretz Yisrael. Machaku, the word chukah, utlul chukah, is a joke or a laughter. In Eretz Yisrael, they laughed at what we just heard, what we just said. They say, I don't understand. Asa gavra v'koi, the husband is standing here, the first husband is standing right over here. V'yad amris lo teitzei, and you're saying that she can remain with the second husband? What happened in this story? When we read the Mishnah, we see a woman whose husband went abroad. She was told that he's dead. Well, based on that, she went and married a second fellow. Yeah, but he's standing right over here. The Mishnah says, V'achakach bo baila. Her husband is standing right here. So how can you say that she stays with the second husband? Everything was under false pretenses. All one big mistake. Loi tzricha, that which we say that she doesn't leave the second husband, the lo yadinon le, we don't recognize him. That the husband that is standing here, we don't recognize him to be him. Either lo yadinon le, well, if that's the case, we don't know him to be the first husband. Ba'id echad amai teitze, according to Rav's teaching, that if according to Rav, the Mishnah said that if it was one witness that came that said the husband died, so when the guy comes back, so she leaves the second husband. Why should she leave the second husband? If you had her, there was one witness that said that the husband died, and based on that she went ahead and married a second fellow, some guy comes back that we don't recognize, why should she leave the second husband? Lo tzricha, further clarification. Well, that we need this halacha. The osu betray the amri. Two people come along with this guy who is purported to be her husband. Two others come along with him and say, anan havinon bahadei mechinofak viadhashta viatun hu delo yadisule. We were with him from the moment he left till now. We have not left his presence. We've been with him the whole time. And it's and this is him. You are the ones that don't recognize him. And now you'll ask, how could that be? There's precedent for this. You see in the scriptures. Vayakir Yosef es echovu hein lo hikiruhu. When Yosef, as a 17-year-old, was sold into slavery by his brothers, many years later, they met up with him in Egypt, and the pasuk says that Yosef recognized his brothers. They were adult brothers. He was only 17. They were older than he when they sold him. So they didn't change too much, but they didn't recognize him because from a 17-year-old till now, The Omer of Chisto, Rav Chisto explains, Malamit Shiyotze Belo Chasim HaZokon. He left their presence initially, that's Yosef, when he was sold by them, he was unbearded. He didn't have a growth of beard. Ubaba Chasim HaZokon, and they come and see a man with a bearded face. Therefore, with regard to our story, and we're going to now explain what Rav said with all of this information in mind. A man had gone abroad, and one witness came and told the wife that your husband is dead. Then she goes and marries a second fellow. Afterwards, a fellow comes back claiming to be her husband, and there are two people accompanying the husband saying, yeah, this is her first husband. So, if her marriage to the second man was based on the testimony of merely one individual, so they are believed when they say this is her husband. However, if there were two witnesses, and this is what Rav was saying, but if there were two witnesses that said her husband died, well, based on their word, she married a second man, a second husband, and then afterwards the first husband comes back with these two testifiers about him, she does not have to leave her second husband. The Gemara asks, sof, but in the end, treu trei ninu, you have two witnesses that said, treu trei means two versus two. You have two witnesses saying that the first husband died. You have these two fellows saying that this is him. He's not dead. This is your husband. This is your first husband. Vehabo oleho ba'asham tolui koi. Asham tolui is a type of sin offering. It's called a guilt offering when there's a matter of doubt. How can Rav say, according to everything we've explained till now, that if her marriage to the second fellow was based on the testimony of two witnesses claiming he died, how could she stay with the second guy? There's an issue of doubt here. You have a woman who had the status of a married woman now moving in with a second husband who says that she's unmarried, who says she's a widow. You've got two other guys countering the first two versus two. You've created an issue of doubt, and anyone who has relations with her would have to bring a guilt offering. It's an unlawful marriage. It's a marriage where there's doubt, regarding her permissibility. So how can you say that, well, if she married based on the testimony of two witnesses, she stays with the second guy? But there are these other two guys that are countering that. Omar Rav Sheshes. Kagon Shenises Liechod Me'edeha. We said that she married a second husband. You know who she married? She married one of the two witnesses that said he was dead. So that from his standpoint, from that witness's standpoint, he's the second husband. There's no doubt. Osham Tolui is a guilt offering that's brought when there's an element of doubt. But there's no doubt. She's totally muteris in his mind. Well, the Gemara asks, he gufa b'osham Tolui kaima, but from her standpoint, how can she marry the second fellow? Is there not an element of doubt in her mind? She didn't see him dead. The Gemara answers, no, there's no element of doubt. B'oimeres bori li. She is claiming it is clear to me. And Rashi adds at the top, bori li, kagon al yedei simonim. I have signs. There were signs that they testified concerning the man that they saw dead. It's clear to me that was my husband. V'osham toli enu bo elo al misha li bo nokfo. The guilt offering, the suspended guilt offering, as it's sometimes translated, that's brought only when there's someone whose conscience is bothering them. Libo nokfo. That is an expression that means that they feel a sense of guilt or doubt in their mind. He doesn't, because that means the second husband. He's one of the witnesses that said he was dead. She doesn't, because she's sure he's dead based on what we just saw in the Rashi. The Gemara asks, well, if everything we've said till now is what Rav is talking about, notice we have a long question here. Ihachi mai lameimra. Well then, what is Rav informing us when he says that if it's al pishnei edim, that she doesn't leave the second husband? That's all very obvious. And how obvious is that? Afinu Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yosi. This is a name we haven't seen yet. We're going to see it shortly in the Tanaic source. Even he, who represents a, we'll say, a strict approach to things. But even he, lo ka'omar elo kishebo edim v'achar kach nises. Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yossi will tell us about a story that's similar to what we've been discussing, and he says she has to leave the second husband. Well, he says what he does, that she has to leave, that's only when she didn't marry until not only the two witnesses that said he was the husband was dead were there, but the two countering witnesses appeared as well, and then she got married. That's what this line means. Ella, he says that she, Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yossi, is a, as I say, a strict opinion that says she has to leave the second husband. That's only when the second set of witnesses that said he did not die came, and only afterwards she got married. Avol nises v'achakach bo edim lo omar. But in the case that we have been describing, certainly that's what the case that the Mishnah seemed to present, where she first got married and then the witnesses claiming he was alive appeared. Even he doesn't say she has to leave the second husband. And from here till the end of the frame section is simply background to what we have mentioned. Desanya, Shnayim Omrim Meis, Shnayim Omrim Lo Meis. Two witnesses say her husband died, and two witnesses say he didn't. Another case involving the freeing up of a woman is Shnayim Omrim Nisgarsho, Shnayim Omrim Lo Nisgarsho. Two witnesses say she was divorced, and two witnesses say no. Harei Zu Lo Tinasei. We all agree that a woman like that, there's an element of doubt, so she shouldn't marry a second husband. Ve'im nises lo teitzei. But if she does, she doesn't have to leave the second husband. Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi Omar, teitzei. She has to leave the second husband. Omar Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi Amosei Ani Omer teitzei. When is it that I say she has to leave the second husband? Bizman shebo edim v'achar kach nises. When the, we'll call them the edim of restriction appear, and then she has the nerve, so to speak, to get married. Avol nises v'achar kach bo edim. If a woman had two witnesses indicating her widowhood or her divorcee status, that's all. Two witnesses claiming she's free to marry, and she does, and she marries someone else. V'achar kach bo edim. And then after she married a second man, a new husband, other witnesses come that would be of a restrictive nature that aser her. Harei zu lo teitzei. She doesn't have to leave the second husband. So you see, even Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yossi, who is the stricter of the Tanaic opinions, if you are dealing with the case that Rav was explaining, Rav was commenting on the Mishnah, and it seemed from the simple reading of things that you're dealing with a woman that first married based on witnesses that free her to marry, and then after she married the second fellow, the restrictive witnesses showed up. No one says she has to leave. No Tanaic opinion says she has to leave. So what's Rav coming to tell us? Ki koma Rav Nami. Rav's din was in fact bizman shebo edim v'achar kach nises la'afuke mid Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yossi. Rav was talking about a case where the restrictive witnesses showed up before she remarried the second fellow. And Rav is telling me that if her initial marriage was if her marriage was based on the fact that there had been two witnesses saying he was dead, even though two witnesses claiming otherwise appeared before she married the new husband, she doesn't have to leave the new husband. And that is the opinion of the Tana Kamo, to the exclusion of Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Yossi, and that's what Rav's agenda is, to tell us that we're not going to follow Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yossi. Let's take a look at Rashi on the third line from the top. Ki koma Rav nami kishibo eidim v'chulei v'hochi koma Rav. And thusly, Rav's original halacha is to be read. Lo shanu, that which the Mishnah teaches, she has to leave the second husband. Elo b'eid echad. That's only where there was one witness that claimed that he was dead. That means that the first husband was dead. The Hossam, Afagav Denises, in that case, even though she married a second guy, V'acharkach bo bailo, and then the husband showed up, Kirikotoni Masnisen, Teitse, she has to leave the second husband. Aval Alpi Shnayim Edim, if she married based on two witnesses that said her husband was dead, afilu bo bailo v'acharkach nises, even if the husband came before she remarried and then she remarried, lo teitse, she doesn't leave the second husband, ilo yadinon le uketa'u chidetaritzna, unless we know him to be the real husband. But if we don't know him to be the real husband, but simply it was two witnesses that came along with the husband saying that this is him, and we say, well, we don't recognize him, it's only on your word, that doesn't matter that there are two witnesses that say this is him, we don't recognize him, and her marriage was based on the fact that prior to this there had been two witnesses claiming he was dead. Even though, and we're just repeating ourselves, even though she waited for her remarriage to a point in time after this husband, this guy showed up with the two witnesses claiming it is he, that doesn't matter. She can stay with the second fellow. And this, of course, as we said, is to the exclusion of Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yossi, who said that the heter to stay with the second fellow is only if her marriage to the second man was before the restrictive type witnesses showed up with the purported husband. Let's continue in the Gemara. V'iko di Omar. Another approach regarding what was Rav coming to teach us. Rav had mentioned that the Mishnah's teaching that she has to leave, that's only if the testimony concerning the husband's death was one witness. But if two witnesses said that he died, then she can stay with the second husband. So the second version of explaining Rav reads, Taimo denises v'acharkach bo edim. The only reason that she can stay with the second husband is that, in fact, her marriage was prior to the appearance of the restrictive type witnesses. Avol bo edim v'acharkach nises teitse. However, if after the initial set of witnesses came, before she remarries, a second set of witnesses that are of a restrictive nature show up, and then she remarries, she has to leave the second husband. Teitse k'man k'rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi. That is in line with Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi. So that according to this version, Rav is basically coming to tell us that we paskin like Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara now raises a question. You'll notice that this is a long question. Takes us to the first wide line. Mosiv Rava. Rava is going to be questioning Rav's teaching. And we're going to read a Tanaic source, and the truth is that this Tanaic source is I would have to say it's rather vague, but we're going to be adding a lot of explanation in order to see what the question is. The source says, Minayin she'im loy rotza depanu. From where do we know that if a Kohen doesn't want to sanctify himself. That means he wants to remain defiled, or he wants to remain married to women that are unfit to him, that are psulos to him. Now, if a kohen takes that, adopts that attitude and behavior, dipanu, we lash him until he sanctifies himself. Talmud Lomar v'kidashto. The Torah says in the context of kohanim that they are to be sanctified, which we take to mean baal korchu, even against his will. So what we're describing is a kohen in this case, but we're talking about a man who is married in an improper fashion, hechidami. And by the way, we're citing a gzeres hakosav, and Rashi makes this point to inform us of something that would otherwise not be so obvious. Things that are very obvious, you don't need a pasuk to tell us how to treat him. So hey chidomi, what are we talking about? If we're talking about a situation where you have a woman, this kohen married. Now this is a woman that had been married to a previous man, and she's and the kohen that she's marrying is not one of the witnesses. He's not sure. He's not one of the witnesses that said he was dead. And she's not saying, I'm sure he's dead. So you've got a woman that was known to be married, and then she's marrying some second fellow. In the case of this source, would be the Kohen. And it's kind of like a vague situation where neither he nor she are really sure. So tzricha l'meima de dafnoi. Is it necessary to tell us that he is to be lashed? You're dealing with a highly questionable marriage. It's obvious we would force them apart. Elolav, it must be a case. And in other words, I need a pasuk to tell me something that's not so obvious. And rather, what are the circumstances? The niseis li'echod me'edeha. The source is describing a case where the woman had married one of the witnesses that said he was dead. And then witnesses claiming he was still alive showed up. In other words, we are dealing with a case where a woman had in fact heard from two witnesses that her husband was dead. She married one of them. She was sure, he was sure, and with that she then married one of those witnesses, and afterwards witnesses claiming he was alive showed up. V'ka'omra Borili, and she was claiming that it's clear to her that the fellow was dead. Fikotoni depano, and it says in this source that we lash almo mafkinon lo mine. The lashing indicates that we separate the second husband from the woman, and that's not like Rav. The Gemara has several approaches to defend Rav, and you can see we've numbered them accordingly. Number one, Isur Kahuna Shaini. The source that you're citing as a problem, as a kasha, as a question on Rav, is a source, in fact, that is limited to Kohanim. When you're dealing with Kohanim, so we're extra restrictive, extra strict. V'boy Seimo, my depanu, depanu be'edim. We take a look at Rashi. Depanu be'edim. Based in Muzharim l'troach achar edim lahakchish esorishoinim amatirim nosa. We explained before that the word depanu had to do with lashing. And according to this, we're not lashing him. We're rather insisting that the court exercises precaution and should attempt to find witnesses to counter the first witnesses that said the husband was dead. Kedei lekadesh es hakayin shelo yisoena, so as to heighten the sanctity of the kohen that he shouldn't marry the woman. In other words, before she marries, After hearing two witnesses claiming the husband was dead, the court should move in and seek out witnesses that could counter the first witnesses, so that would prevent her marrying the kohen. Avo mishenisei lo teisei. However, if after she married, then they find witnesses that say that he's still alive, she would not have to leave, just as Rav had taught. We continue in the Gemara, a third approach. V'bo yisema, kishebo edim, v'achar kach niseis, v'rabbi Menachem, v'rabbi Yossi hi. We take a look at Rashi. V'ibo yisema, li'olam deniseis. We're talking about a case where she did marry, as opposed to the second answer where we were exhorting the court to find witnesses before she marries the second husband. According to the third answer, she in fact got married. Ukigon de bo edim v'achar kach niseis. And the source that spoke about being lashed is because the witnesses showed up. The restrictive witnesses showed up before she got married, before she married the second husband. Ubahom moide Rav, as Rashi says. And regarding this case, we saw that Rav conceded, and that of course was according to the Ika di Omar above. If you notice in the narrow lines, we had an Aleph and Beis. There was an Ika di Omar where Rav conceded to Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi that in such a case she should not have married, and she is expected to leave him, and that's why there is lashing. And now we continue with a new approach, that of Rav Ashi. And Rav Ashi is coming to explain the original teaching of Rav. Rav Ashi Omer, my lo teitze de ka'oma Rav. What did Rav mean when he said that, but if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses, so she doesn't have to leave? Lo teitze mehatero harishon. All that means is that she doesn't have to leave her original permitted status, i.e. permitted to her first husband. Why is that? Why can she go back to her first husband? Even though, in general, a woman was married to a man, and if she had intimacy with another man, she becomes forbidden to her husband. Here you have a woman that was married. She went and married a second fellow. She's entitled to go back to the first husband because we consider this a case of oines, a case of something beyond her control. And as Rav had said, that if she married the second husband because of the testimony of two witnesses, in Jewish law you have nothing stronger than the testimony of two witnesses that permits her to marry the second man. And if the first husband comes back and we recognize him and it's clear to us that it was all one big mistake, that's exactly it. She was an oinus and she can go back to her first husband. So the expression lo teitze means she doesn't leave the original heter, namely the original mutter marriage, the permitted marriage that she had with her original husband. The Gemara asks, but ha'omra Rav chada zimna? If that's what Rav is saying over here, he has already said that elsewhere. This non nisei shelo birshus muteres lachzor lo. That which we had seen in our Mishnah, where it says if she got married shelo birshus, she can go back to the first husband. V'yomar Rav, huna omar Rav. Ochi Hilchason, Rav said that that's the way we paskin. And we have to add here, when the Mishnah taught Nisei Shelo Bershus, it meant she got married to the second husband without needing a court permission, but rather because two witnesses had said her husband died. If that's the basis upon which she married the second husband, she can go back to the first husband. And Rav rules like that. So what do I need the teaching of Rav that we had here on Omen Aleph? The Gemara says, Chado michlolo de chaverta itmar. It wasn't as if Rav said the same halacha twice. but rather Rav said the halacha once, and the second teaching was derived from the first teaching. We continue in the Gemara with a bow tie that you see coming up, and we call this number two. This is this is something featured on the side under our Nosei, our topic heading, where we read Dino Shel Shmuel. We're going to study Shmuel's halacha. Ha dekatani teitzei mizeh mizeh, that which the Mishnah teaches she must leave both husbands. Hainu hecho delo makhoshaso, that's where the woman is not countering, where she remains silent when she hears the testimony that her husband is still alive, or when the husband shows up and she doesn't challenge him, claiming you're not him. Omar Shmuel, we read in the Gemara, Lo Shanu, the Mishnah that says that she must leave, just to go over the case again, the woman was informed that her husband was dead, she went ahead and married someone else, and then the husband shows up. That's as far as the Mishnah is concerned. So the Mishnah says, well, she's got to leave the second husband and the first husband. So Shmuel says that whole teaching is lo shonu elo shaloma koshoso, where she doesn't contradict the husband's original husband's claim to be in fact him. Avo makoshoso, if she denies it, she contradicts him. Lo teitzei, she doesn't have to leave the second husband. Now that in and of itself is a rather vague teaching, because we don't know what are the circumstances. B'mayaskinon, well, what are we talking about? E lemo bebe tre. If you're talking about a case where two witnesses come and say that this is him, ki machshoso le my have, if she's contradicting him, but it's of what value is that? If it's in the face of two witnesses that are saying this is him, her countering her contradiction is of no value. Elo bechad. So it must be that there's only one witness. And then we say, Taimo demakhoshosoi. The reason that she doesn't have to leave is because she is countering him. Ha shaska teitzei. But if she remains silent, then, according to Shmuel, she would have to leave the second husband because of the testimony of this one witness that is saying that this is him. So what are we dealing with? We have a woman who heard that her husband was dead, and she got married, and exactly how she heard the original husband was dead, so that isn't spelled out over here, and we're going to go, as we go through the Gemara, we're going to suggest that she might have even heard that he was dead because of the testimony of one witness. She then went and married a second husband. The original fellow, supposedly, he shows up with one witness claiming that this is him. And according to Shmuel, if she doesn't contradict him, so she has to leave the second husband. And now we ask, how can that be? Why, if she remains silent, does she have to leave the second husband only because of this testimony of one witness claiming that he's alive? V'omar Ula. We have a rule taught by Ula called Mokoim Shemino Torah Eirechot. In topics or circumstances where the Torah grants believability to a singular witness, which is Just bear in mind, that's an exception to the general halacha that you need two witnesses to establish facts. But there are cases where the Torah gives believability to one witness. And an example of that is a single witness claiming that a woman's husband is dead. So cases like that, situations like that, where the Torah gives believability to one witness. Hare kan shnayim. In our eyes, in our mind's eye, we view the witness claiming that he was dead as if there are two witnesses. So then you have a woman that based on that kind of testimony got married. There is no room then for a witness claiming that he is alive, a singular witness claiming he is alive, to have any strength in the face of the equivalent of two witnesses that claimed he was dead. So even though factually factually speaking, there was only one witness that said he was dead, but we give that kind of testimony that a husband is dead, we give it the power of two. The subsequent testimony of one is considered zero. Therefore, the question is, why is it that even if she remained silent, is Shmuel teaching me that she'd have to leave the second husband? In order to answer this question, we have a couple of approaches. Number one, and you can see the diamonds introduce the answers by the term Hocha B'Mayaskinon. Here, what are we talking about? B'Psule Edus U'Chederebi Nechemya. The Halacha of Shmuel that tells us that if she contradicts the husband, the fellow that purports to be the first husband, if she contradicts him so she doesn't leave, but if she remains silent, then she'll have to leave. We're talking about a case of psule edus, uchederebi Nechemya. Before we go further, let's just point out in the next few lines of Gemara, we're going to have to learn the Gemara in tandem with Rashi. So we look at the Rashi. In the lower part of the narrow lines, Rashi says, Hocho dechimak chishole lo nafka. Here, namely, Shmuel's teaching that says that if she contradicts the purported husband as saying, you're not him, so she doesn't have to leave the second husband. The psule edus askinon. Psule edus means people that are, generally speaking, not qualified to serve as witnesses. Uli oilom betray. In fact, we are talking about two of them. The two that claim that this is the husband could go and crave him, relatives. Those are generally speaking unacceptable witnesses. Those are psuleidus. Oi, noshem, or women. Asu bahade. They came with this husband. Diamri zehu, and they say, yeah, this is your husband. The komash molon Shmuel. And Shmuel is telling us the azlinon bosor roiv deois, that when it comes to situations like this, we follow the majority of people that are there. Hoyo v'ein kan edus kshera, since we're not dealing with standard laws of regular testimony. We're going to go on in the Gemara a little bit more, and then look at the Rashi where the circumstances are spelled out much clearer. So we said that Shmuel's halacha, which makes a distinction between her contradicting the husband versus not contradicting him, is talking about a case of psule edus. When the husband shows up and the testimony surrounding him claiming that he is the husband, we're talking about, let us say, relatives that are telling us this is he. And we're talking about two psuli edus. Two of them are claiming that this is he. And Shmuel, now, with this in mind, made a distinction between the woman contradicting them or the woman remaining silent. Based on Rabbi Nechemya's teaching, the Sanya Rabbi Nechemya Oimer. Rabbi Nechemya tells us that Kol Mokom Sheminu Torah Eid Echad, where the Torah gives believability, in other words, topics where there is believability to one witness, Haloch Achar Rov Deos. You will follow the majority of those that are present. So if five are claiming one thing and six are contradicting them claiming something else, you follow what the six say versus the five. V'asu shtei noshim b'ish echad k'shnei anoshim b'ish echad. And in a topic like that, in a situation like that, if you have one male saying one thing and two women saying something else, the two women would overrule the one man. That's like a case of two men contradicting one man. In this area of halacha, when we deal with testimony, one has to understand that men are considered acceptable witnesses and women are considered unacceptable witnesses. It has nothing to do, by the way, with the inferiority of women, chas v'shalom, heaven forbid, but it has to do with the elements of human awareness that are necessary for testimony. Are those elements, those characteristics, are found in men and are not found, or found to a much lesser degree, in the case of women, because of the different, we'll say, emotional or psychological makeup of them. Even though what I'm saying now is a little, I'm stepping out of bounds a little bit, because in the traditional approach to matters like this, this is a gzeiras hakosuv. But it should be, one should be at least aware that there are differences between men and women, and whether that's the actual reason or not, that we could, that's something subject to debate. But what my point is that it has nothing to do with matters of inferiority. In fact, in other areas of halacha, the sages tell us that women have a higher degree of knowledge and awareness with regard to other matters that require intellectual sensitivity, etc. That's going way beyond the realm of our discussion, but just to set the record straight, testimony is one area of human experience, and in this area, so men are acceptable and women are unacceptable. In other areas of the human experience, women are considered having greater astuteness, awareness than men. That having been said, we go back to our Gemara, where we see Rabbi Nechemya's rule. But now, in order to tie everything together, we will have to learn through the Rashi, and after that, hopefully the din of Shmuel will become much clearer. So now we go to the Rashi, Dibur HaMaschil Uchad Rabbi Nechemya. You'll see this four lines before they get wide, the last of the narrow lines, Uchad Rabbi Nechemya Di Omar Kol Mokoyim Shemino Torah Eid Echad Ein Din Edus Badavar, where you're dealing with a topic that we give believability to one witness. We said the topics include our case of a witness testifying a man, a husband, died. There's another topic in the Torah, the topic of Sota, where one witness says that a woman definitely behaved promiscuously in intimacy with another man, a married woman being intimate with another man. That is the topic of Soita. It's another area where the Torah grants believability to a singular witness. So in these areas, we say that the standard halachas of edus, the standard rules of testimony, are suspended. From the fact that we are giving believability to one witness, which is stepping, we'll say, out of the realm of standard testimony, where a minimum of two witnesses are required. So we're dealing with a topic that's not in the realm of standard testimony. Hilkoch, therefore, psulim ne'amonim kiksherim, v'aloch achar horoiv. Therefore, since the standard rules of testimony don't apply, those people that are generally speaking disqualified from testifying are acceptable here. And we mentioned before, that includes women, relatives, and by the way, in light of the discussion we mentioned before, the Torah disqualifies two relatives, let's say two brothers, from testifying together. Why? The Torah, that's the Torah's will. You'll say, relatives will lie. So we say in halacha, even if the two brothers are Moshe and Aaron, where there's no doubt in anyone's mind that they would lie, nevertheless, Moshe and Aaron cannot serve as witnesses. That's the will of the Torah. Likewise, when we say women are disqualified, that is the will of the Torah. But we continue in the Rashi. V'osu shtei noshim, hamakrishois ish echod. If you have two women that are contradicting the testimony of one man, that's the same as kishnei anoshim b'ish echod. Two men against one man. De mehemni, the two are believed against the one. Hilkoch, ilu lo bo habal. Therefore, in our case, if the husband did not show up, the aid omer mace, and a witness says the husband died. Ushne psule edus omrim lo mace, and two. Generally speaking, disqualified witnesses say he is not dead. Lo nafkalo mecheskas eishes ish. The woman does not leave her original prohibited status of being a married woman. The halacha harov deos. You follow the majority opinions, and in this case, one is saying he's dead, but two are saying that he's still alive. Even if those two happen to be two women, they are followed. Their opinion or their testimony is what we accept. V'chein kishibo habal, v'elu shnei psuli edus imo, ha'omrim zehu. Likewise, in the case of the Mishnah, where the husband shows up and two relatives or two women come along with him saying, yeah, this is the first guy, this is the husband. Vehi omeres she'ein makeres im ze im lav, and the wife is saying, I don't know, I don't recognize them to be the husband or not. Ki lo machshelahu nafka. If she does not contradict them, she must leave. She cannot remain with the second husband. Toha shtei noshim makishos eid horishon shehesia. You have here these two women, the two psule edus, that are saying this is the original husband, countering the first witness that said he was dead, that based on whom she married the second man. V'lo yotzisa mechezkosa. And in a case like this, she doesn't leave her status of being an eishes ish, a married woman. Avol. Now, and here's where Shmuel's din kicks in. But where you have a woman saying, I know this is not him, this is not my husband. Dal eid kamo mehocha. You can, in your mind's eye, even remove the first witness that said he was dead. Take that. You can take that out of the picture. Still, the woman is on solid ground in her marriage to the second man. Ein psule edus ne'emonim lehoid al odom kosher afilu hein elef. Disqualified type witnesses, women, relatives, those are the psuleidus, they are not believed to testify about a kosher individual, a proper individual, even if there are 1,000 of them that are testifying against what she is saying. Shekol odom ne'mon al atzmo b'isurim b'dovar borlo. Everyone is granted unquestioned believability in matters of Isur. Isur is the realm that's outside, we'll say outside monetary matters. When it comes to the realm of that which is permitted and not permitted, I don't know how you would, if you would say areas of ritual law, I don't know, maybe there are better translations, but we're dealing with the non-monetary realm of halacha, that's called the realm of Isur. there a person is believed when he states matters with certainty and clarity, even against all others in the world. Elohim came yesh edus ksheira b'davar. The only time we would weaken the individual in a matter of isur is if you have two kosher witnesses that are countering him. Hilkoch keman delesnu dom. Therefore, since we're dealing with psuli edus here, it's as if they're not around. Again, if the woman is contradicting him. Umecheskas eishus ish yotzolo al pi rishon. And she leaves the status of eishus ish with the testimony of the first witness that the husband is dead. So you combine the first witness saying the husband is dead and her certainty that the guy that shows up is not the husband. So that's what we call machshalei. That's what Shmuel was saying. In a case like that, so she doesn't have to leave. However, if she's lo machshalei, if she's not contradicting the husband, she's saying, I don't know. And originally she had only one husband saying, one witness saying, even if it happened to be a man, one witness saying that he's dead. And now you have two witnesses that are coming along with this guy claiming to be the husband saying, this is he. And the woman is saying, I don't know, she's lo machshalei. So Shmuel tells us she has to leave the second husband. And this entire teaching is based on the rules that we saw in the name of Rebbe Nechemia. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. V'iboy esema. Where in the Gemara you see the squiggle underline, and there's a number 2 to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Another approach, again, all of this is in the face of how can Shmuel say that she has to leave if she remains quiet? After all, she got married based on the testimony of one witness, and one witness is given the strength of two, so that the one witness that says he's dead is if she has two witnesses on her side allowing her to get married, and therefore we don't believe those that come to counter, even if she remains quiet. So we and that was based on Ula's teaching. So now we continue in the Gemara. How do we explain Shmuel that says that when she remains silent she must leave? Hocha b'mayaskinon. Let's read that again. V'iboy esema kol hecha da'osa eid echad kosher meikara. If you were dealing with a case where a man, a kosher acceptable type witness, came at the outset saying that the husband was dead, afilu me'on noshim ke'eid echad damyon, even 100 women countering saying that this is he, this is the original husband, they would be no stronger than one witness, and they would not be able to contradict the man, the Eid Echad Kosher, that came at the outset. Hocha b'mayaskinon, where Shmuel said his halacha, that it all depended on whether she was contradicting the husband or remaining silent. The case here is kagon de'asya isha me'ikara. The woman who remarried was basing her permission to remarry on the testimony of a woman that came at the outset saying that her husband was dead. And in a case like that, where after she remarried the husband shows up and she doesn't contradict him, so Shmuel said she has to leave the second husband. There are more details to this, and we'll see them shortly in the Rashi, but the restatement of that we must learn Rabbi Nechemia again in a restated fashion, because according to this version, though it's a realm where we accept Suli Edus, we don't say, like we said before, that two women can contradict one man. Not so over here, because if one man comes at the outset, even 100 women won't be able to neutralize the one man's testimony. But rather, Rabbi, let's what does Rabbi Nechemya teach? And we're dealing with a case where the woman in our Mishnah got married based on the testimony of not one man that said the husband was dead, but a woman that said the husband was dead. Utirtza the Rabbi Nechemya Hachi, and we'll restate Rabbi Nechemya as follows. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Komokam Shemino Torah Eid Echod, in topics where the Torah gives believability to a singular witness, Haloch Acha Rov Deos. And if there is any discrepancy or contradiction in testimonies, you follow the majority opinion. The Osu Shtei Noshim Beisha Achas, two women that are countering one woman, would be similar to Kishnei Anoshim Beisha Achot, two men versus one man, where you would follow the two over the one. Avol Shtei Noshim Beish Echod Kepalga Upalga Domi. But if you have two women that are countering the testimony of one man, then that would be like palgo palgo, means half and half, or split testimony. At this point, though, we look into the Rashi, as we mentioned before, and everything should hopefully become clear. We want to know what are the circumstances of Shmuel's halacha. So we look at the Rashi, where we left off, in the wide middle of the wide lines. If originally one man came testifying that her husband was dead, afilu mea noshim asyan achashinises, even 100 women that would show up after the woman remarried, viamri lomes, claiming he's not dead, ki aid echod damyan, they would be like a singular witness, vahavulu aid makrish aid, and it would be then essentially a witness contradicting a witness. And the second one would have no believability in accordance with Ula's teaching. And Ula's teaching had stated that in topics where we accept a single witness, that single witness will have the strength of two. And one of those topics is a witness who claims that a husband of a woman died. So the if you have an aid kosher coming at the beginning saying that, he carries the day. Ulu Shmuel, afilu shoska. And according to Shmuel, even if the woman who remarried remains quiet in the face of the man who shows up later claiming to be her husband, because that woman got married in the case of one kosher witness saying that the husband was dead, that is, as we say, that carries the day. And that all the subsequent testimony of Psuvei Edus will have no effect. V'hocha d'chishoska Amar Shmuel Teitzei. In our Gemara, where Shmuel says that where she remains silent, she does have to leave the second husband. Kegon sheniseis al pi isha meikara. Her marriage to the second husband was based on the testimony of a woman at the beginning saying that the husband was dead. Hilkoch ke de Hadron v'asyon trei, therefore, if later on two come with her husband, ishoska I, if she remains quiet, hava le rov deos lisur, then you have a situation of a majority of opinions saying that she should not have remarried. So just to go over this last case, Shmuel's din of silence versus contradiction is a case where the woman had heard that her husband died based on the testimony of a singular woman. She remarried. Then the husband shows up, and two women are claiming this is he. If the woman who remarried contradicts them, so fine. She remains with the second husband. However, if she remains silent, she must leave the second husband. On the next line, Rashi kepalgu palgadamu keed makrish aid. We said that if you have one man saying, let us say, that he's dead, and two women saying that he is not dead, that's the Gemara used the term. It's like palgu palgo keed makrish aid. It's like a witness contradicting a witness. Vafilu shoska ihi lo teitzei And in a case like that, even if the woman who remarried remains silent, she doesn't have to leave the second husband. Hoyo v'niseis, since she married. In other words, first she got married, and then the two women claiming that he's still alive showed up. And this is Kitu Ula, based on Ula's teaching. The Rishon Ne'emon Kishnayim, the first one that showed up, the man that showed up, said that that he's dead, has the power of two. V'hanoch Kuli Ke'arid Echon. And all the others that come afterwards contradicting him, saying that all of the other women coming afterwards saying, or Psule Edus that say that he's still alive, have no greater strength than a singular witness. And one against someone that has the power of two is not going to be believed. We now turn back to the Gemara. Tzricho get mizeh umizeh. We said that a woman who had heard that her husband died, married a second man, and then the husband shows up. So, without getting into all of the explanations that we've been dealing with till now of Rav and Shmuel, what were the circumstances, but the original husband shows up, the Mishnah says she's got to leave both, and she needs a divorce document from the first husband and the second husband. Bishlama meirishon tiboy get. I understand the requirement of requirement of a divorce document from the first husband, because she was really married to him. Now she's not allowed to go back to him, because you're dealing with a married woman that had relations, willing relations with a second man, with another man. So she can't go back to the first husband, but she needs a divorce document. That's understandable. She was really married to him. Why does she need a divorce document from the second fellow as well? That was simply an act of promiscuity as far as we are concerned. There was no marriage that took hold. A married woman that goes with another man, even if he claims to marry her, it's zero. Omar Rav Huna. Rav Huna explains why the halacha wants her to get a divorce document from that second man. Gzeira shema yoimru. We're fearful of the impression in the eyes of the public, people seeing this whole affair. Woman married to first guy, then going to the second guy. People will think. Shema yoimru. Giresh ze v'nosa ze. V'nimseis eishes ish yoitza below get. People will think, not that it happened. People will think that, how is it that this woman who was married a second guy? How is it? Because the first husband must have divorced her. Must have already divorced her. And she legitimately married the second husband. And she's a full-fledged eishes ish. And if she leaves the second husband without a get, people will think that an eishes ish, a married woman, can leave a marriage without a divorce document. The Gemara goes on. Ihachi, if that's what is on our mind, if that's what the pshat in the Mishnah is, why she needs a get from the second fellow as well, then seifa dikotoni. The Seifa is the Mishnah later on. It's the continuation of our Mishnah. And it says there, Omru lo meispalech. A woman was told that her husband died. V'niskatsha. And she accepted betrothal from another man. V'ach. Betrothal is an initial stage of marriage, but it's not a consummation of marriage. It's called kiddushin or erusin. And she entered erusin with a second man. He had given her money in marriage, in expecting her to marry him. V'achakach bo baylo, and then the first husband shows up. Muteres lachzor lo. She's allowed to go back to the first husband. It sounds like she's allowed to go back just like that, without getting a get from the second husband. Well then, but hasam nami neima, under those circumstances, why not introduce that which we said here as well? When the public saw her accepting kiddushin from the second husband, aren't people going to figure gireish ze v'kideish ze, that the first husband must have divorced her, and that's what enabled her to become mikudeshes to the second husband, and if we and she's going to go back to the first husband without a get from the second fellow, here we're matir to go back to the first guy without a divorce document. People are going to think that she was actually married to the second fellow because of the kiddushin, and she's going back, she's leaving him without a get. And yet we don't seem to be worried about all of that. The Gemara responds, Li'oilom bayo get. She does require a get from the second man in the Seifa. The Gemara asks, Ihochi, if she is getting a get from the second man in the Seifa, and then what did the Seifa say? She's then allowed to go back to the first husband. Hey, but that's usur. Ihochi nimtzo zeh machzir grushoso mishenises. Mishenis arsa. We have a case of a man who was married to a woman who divorced her. And then he's taking her back after she entered Erusin with a second husband. So how can that be allowed? So just let's go over that point again. If And of course, all of this is in the eyes and the mind of the public. If you're right that Muteres Lachzor L'Rishon is a case where she in fact gets a get from the second guy so as to prevent the problem of people thinking that an Eishes Ish can leave without a get, what new problem have we constructed in the eyes of the public? People will think that a man who divorced his wife and she enters marriage to a second man and is divorced from him is allowed to go back to the first husband. And that's not true. She's not allowed. A person can take back his wife after he divorces her, provided she didn't marry a second man. But in this case, she did. The Gemara responds, K'Rab Yosi ben Kippur d'Yomar. The understanding of things is according to his teaching that said that halacha, that a man cannot take back the woman that he divorced if she married a second man, that's only if she consummated the marriage with the second man. Min ha-nisuin asura, min ha-erusin muteris. If the relationship with the second man was only an erusin level relationship, even if she's divorced from him, she is allowed to go back to the first husband. So far, the way we are explaining our Mishnah and the Seifa as well is that she needs a get not only from the first husband, but she will need a get from the second husband. The Gemara asks, midikotani Seifa. According to what we just said, we had said that in the Seifa, there is a get given by the man that was mikadesh her. But it says in the Seifa the following, Afal pi she nosan lo achroin get loy posla min hakahuna. Even though the second husband might give her a get, that does not disqualify her from marrying a Kohen. Now, as you might know, hopefully at this point those who have been learning the Masifta know this very well, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. And a divorcee is a woman who received the get because it was necessary to give her the get. The Seifa says that if the second husband, the one that was Mekadesh her, had given her a get, she's not considered a divorcee whatsoever. She's not considered disqualified from the kuna. Michlau, the lo bayo get it. It shows us that she does not need a get. Di bayo get, amai lo poslim in a kuna. If she was a woman that required a get, so why would she not be disqualified from the priesthood? So we have to then reevaluate what we've said till now. Ela Seifa, as far as the Seifa is concerned, the case where she entered Kiddushin with the second husband, the second man, she definitely does not need a get. Seifa, Amri, people will figure Kiddushe To'os Havu. We know she was married to the first one, but how is it that she's leaving the second husband without a get? because it must be that the initial terms of the marriage with the second guy were conditional, based on a condition that was not met. Kiddushei Tolos would mean a case where a man says, be married to me on condition that I am X, and he turns out to be Y. Rashi gives the example, I want you to marry me on the condition that I am a Kohen, and it turns out that he's not a Kohen. So such a marriage doesn't get off the ground, and therefore she doesn't need a divorce document from the second man. So as far as, and not only does she not need a divorce document from the second man, people aren't going to think that here a married woman can leave a marriage without a get. People will understand that she wasn't a married woman. The Gemara asks, well then, Reisha Nami, why then in our Mishnah, where we said when the husband shows up, Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh, why do we say she needs a get from the second husband? Won't people say the same thing? Reisha Nami, Amri Nisuei Tos Havu, that it was a consummated marriage with the second man on mistaken grounds. So that there, the need for a get from the second husband went by letter of the law. She was never really married to the second husband. The first husband showed up. She's a married woman. She can't marry a second man. Letter of law, she doesn't need a get. The Mishnah says she needs a get from the second husband. Again, why? Because people will otherwise think that she had been divorced from the first husband and the second husband was a real marriage, and then we would see her leaving that without a get. People think an Eishes Ish can leave without a get. But here, people aren't going to think all of that. People are going to think that it was a Nisuei Tos. It was a marriage based on mistaken terms. And a marriage based on mistaken terms, in fact, doesn't need a divorce document. And people aren't going to think married women can leave. She's not a married woman. It was Kiddusha is a Nisuei Tos. The Gemara says, Kansua Rabbanan. We impose a stringency. Knas, generally speaking, as a fine. We fine her. And Rashi says, Lo Talin and Lakula. We're not going to assume leniency here. In other words, we are going to, because she married the second fellow, we're going to impose the need for a divorce document. And the Seifa then, when she entered Kiddushin with the second man, let us there also require a divorce document. The Gemara answers, there's a big difference between our Mishnah and the case there in the Seifa. Reisha di Avda Isura Kansua. In the Reisha, the woman did an actual act that would otherwise be prohibited. She had intimacy. That's Nisuin. She consummated her marriage with the second man. There was an actual act of intimacy. So, therefore, we come down hard. We impose this restriction, i.e., a requirement of her getting a divorce document from the second man. Seifa, the law of the Isura, in the Seifa case, all that happened there, she entered the Erusin stage of marriage with the second husband, but didn't do an act of, there was no act of intimacy with him. Lo Kansua Rabbanan. Therefore, the Rabbanan don't impose a knas, a ruling of stringency on her. And as far as all of the thinking that we introduced before, people would think that a married woman can leave the marriage without a get. That's not true. That's not true. People will understand, or people will explain her departure from the second man based on the idea that his original marriage with her was a kiddushei tos, as we explained. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.